where is that?
At the police.
I'm coming, God damn it. What do you want with an old lady?
Ma'am, we're looking for Philo Godot. Our records say he lives at this here address.
Well, your records are wrong. He lives at that address in the back. What do you want him for?
Just looking for him, ma'am.
Well, he don't live there anymore. He's gone off. Took that son of a bitch Clyde with him.
Clyde?
His ape.
His ape.
You heard me. What you making me repeat myself for?
Do you know where he's gone?
Oh, who gives a damn? Stealing all my Oreos, crapping all over the place. 12 ribs my ass.
Thank you very much. Sorry to bother you, ma'am.
Yeah.
Good night, ma'am.
I'm sorry, too. So see, leaving old lady alone, fending for herself, no protection.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the invasion of the remake, or is it isolation of the remake? I don't know anymore. Welcome to Apocalypse for April. It's unfortunate everybody can't be in my studio with us like normal, but like last week, we're going to have everybody coming in through Google Hangouts, and we're going to have the conversation that way. That means it's going to sound different, so please bear with us, and I'm sure everybody at home, also isolated, completely understands and will weather the slight sound changes of the next few weeks. But Apocalypse in April is continuing on, and we're going to be starting with Every Which Way But Loose. And joining me today is the man who this whole Apocalypse is the brainchild of, Jeff Omega.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good. Yeah. What was it? Like a couple months ago, you kind of came up with this and hit me up with this idea, and I loved it. Maybe it was like back in January.
Well, and it's close to a human. I love it.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hey, Trish. Welcome to the show. Trish is back with us this week.
Yes.
And of course, Sam is over there in his hovel as well. Hey, Sam.
It ain't a hovel, and I got a hairy ass.
I've decided I'm thinking maybe I'm not shaving my legs.
I don't shave my legs, and yes, I'm probably the closest one in this group to an orangutan, so...
You are the hairier one.
I am the hairier one.
At the end of a couple weeks, it'll be Sam, and it'll be him jumping around, reaching toward the monolith, but it's a bar of soap.
Yes.
It could very well be.
Hey, everybody's... Well, you got 12 ribs just like the rest of us.
It's charcoal soap.
Yeah, all the rage.
Yep.
All the rage. I don't understand that one.
You know, good for your skin unless you live in Alberta, because it's already very dry here.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
I hope everybody's staying home, staying safe, but we have a lot of monkeying around to do and a lot of monkey puns to do. Yeah, we're going to be talking Clint Eastwood. This was a departure for him, Every Which Way But Loose from 1978. When you watch this movie, you can easily see how this probably was a Burt Reynolds vehicle.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Although it does make me wonder if Clyde was supposed to be Dom DeLuise.
You know what? And honestly, for the longest time, I thought that this movie was starring Burt Reynolds. Not sure why.
It still feels like a Burt Reynolds movie.
Like, yeah. I mean, it was written with him in mind, so...
Mm-hmm. When you think of the type of movies Burt was doing at the time, Smokey and the Bandit.
Oh, yeah.
This really fits in that kind of action comedy mode of the road movies with the truckers and all that. That was what this was for the most part.
Well, it was a really good fit for Clint Eastwood, I thought.
It was an interesting transition for him because it did move him away from being super serious to being in something that at least has a sense of humor.
Yeah.
He really is the straight man through the whole movie for the most part.
Well, I mean, one thing I really liked about the movie is, I mean, it is a really good example of late 70s American documentary style filmmaking.
Well, and it also is, there was this whole period where there was a bunch of ideas were like, let's just put a monkey in it. Like yeah. BJ and the Bear. That's the biggest example. Like they put a whole show around that.
Yeah. You know, there was the guy who wrote this movie. He wrote one other movie and it also has orangutans in it.
Oh, man.
That's true. And that was Going Ape.
Yeah.
That was actually my first trip to a drive-in was a double feature of Going Ape and Airplane.
Oh, man.
Nice.
When I was a kid, I remember my parents like snuck me and my brother in, just hit us under a blanket with some shit on top of it. Like, and make it look like a cooler.
You know,
oh, man.
What I'm hearing is your parents wrapped you up in a blanket and then they drug you to a theater and said, all right, this is your sense of humor now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everybody thinks I hate comedies.
Yeah, you know, well, you just like very specific comedies.
You're very picky about your comedies.
I am. But I used to love this movie.
Yeah, I sort of did, movie. But it doesn't age well.
You know what? I got to agree with Trish on this one. I didn't really like it that much as a grown-up.
Nope. You know,
and to be honest, even when I was a kid, I think I liked the sequel more than this one.
The sequel is superior.
I've never seen the sequel. I'll go check it out.
I think part of it is because you're not dealing with the character development.
Yeah.
So it just sort of moves right into the story, and it is a lot more fun, and it focuses more on Philo's sort of bare knuckles fighting career, whereas the first movie is a bit of a jumbled mess because you have the love story, you have the road trip, you have his obsession with Tank, and which is kind of obsession, I should say. But yeah, there's a lot happening, and it doesn't all tie together great.
Well, it's a series of vignettes. It's like the Cannonball Run movies.
What I was thinking with, like, it's kind of a lot more documentary style. Like, everyone is a lot more naturalistic with their acting. The movie's a lot more interested in people in a setting rather than trying to say anything specifically about it.
Yeah, I think I like the sequel more because it doesn't have that slower pacing that this movie does.
Yeah.
I think for the most part, that for me, it's the pacing.
The pacing.
I actually did really like it, though.
Oh, was this your first time?
You know what? I thought that I had seen it before, but maybe I have seen the second one because, I have not seen this movie before. Yeah, I liked it a lot. It was really good, but I also have been watching a lot of late 70s movies lately anyway, so it's fit right in there.
Right on.
And I'm very forgiving of Clint Eastwood, especially his 70s and 80s stuff, just because I'm a huge fan.
Yeah. So, and there was a lot of really good, like, little moments throughout the movie, like when he was fishing.
Yes.
See, yeah, I like that. You know, it's very rude to point a gun at somebody while they're fishing, but then it becomes a whole thing.
Yeah, they're like both trying to get the fish.
Like, oh God, you've got a fish.
Yeah, some of the gags are real fun. And yeah. Just seeing Clint Eastwood react to them.
Oh yeah, like some of the gags are really good.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, there's few and far between is the problem with the movie, is the gags are funny, but there aren't enough of them. I think is the problem. I think that might be why it doesn't stand up as well.
Yeah, and I think maybe you might be right there because there seem to be few and far between, and there's a lot of just montages of driving and in the bars and when he's searching for Lynn. And the movie, I feel like the movie could be about half an hour shorter.
At least 15 minutes, yeah. I was just about to say that. Don't forget that she's always Lynn Halsey Taylor. Always.
Yes, she is Lynn Halsey Taylor, yes.
How long is the movie?
Hour and 44 minutes, I think.
114 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Almost so, 2 hours.
6 minutes shy of 2 hours, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, hour and 54.
I was close. You know, this movie, I was surprised to see that it's very, very, very successful. $5 million budget, around like an $85 million return.
Yeah, yeah, $10 million in its opening weekend. So
yeah, it was the first money. Movie, first movie ever to do more than $10 million in its opening weekend.
And still... Like, if you adjust for inflation, it is still Clint Eastwood's most successful film.
Yeah, which is actually pretty crazy when you think about it.
Mm-hmm. When you think Clint Eastwood, your memory goes to spaghetti westerns and Dirty Harry, right? You would figure those would be his big ones. No, this was
a lot of those movies too. You know, they're made in Italy. They also were made for fairly little money. It's pretty impressive that, like, yes, Every Which Way But Loose is made for little money and had a big return, but so did a lot of other Clint Eastwood movies that are also pretty big. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, with his Italian westerns, they weren't even released in North America until 2 or 3 years after they'd been released in Europe. Right? Mm-hmm. So they just never really got the same exposure that the North American ones that he made did. And I think in terms of North American made films, this is just was what people were looking for from him for some reason.
Yeah. You know, actually, this this movie really, really felt like a folk movie. Like, it got really bad reviews from critics, but, like, people really liked it. It does kind of feel more like a just like an average Joe kind of story, movie, characters.
Well, it's blue-collar America in the 70s,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. My dad loved Clint Eastwood in general movies, and I imagine this one spoke to him. You know, here's this tough guy, loves the country music, like my dad. It was kind of spoke to a generation, and I think that's kind of our key when we go in to remake this. I had this cool idea, but I had it after I did my casting. I'm like, well, when I pitch this, this is going to throw all my casting out the window.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to do it again, so... But I think Sam's going to really like it because it'll speak more to us.
I'm looking forward to hearing what you have come up with. And it's probably going to screw up my casting as well, but that's okay.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Like, we always come up with our cast before we come up with our ideas. Now, in this particular movie, Clint Eastwood is playing kind of like this underground bare knuckles boxer. His buddy Orville arranges the fights. And that's kind of how he makes his money. See him. He does have a day job, though. We do see him coming off of it at the beginning of the movie, and then we never see it again.
Well, Orville is his brother.
No, it's his friend. He lives.
Really?
Yeah.
He says Ma's not going to get her license this time.
Yeah, everybody calls her Ma.
Oh, okay.
But he, at one point, he actually does specifically introduce Orville as his friend. So,
okay.
But I get the confusion because I even thought that too. And then he's, oh, I'm like, oh no, they're not related. They're friends. So,
oh, see, I think it's just a dumb thing that he says. Like, I do not believe that they are not related.
Well, he is a dumb dude.
Exactly. Like, I believe he might have said that so he doesn't want people to know that they're related.
Yeah.
The character has a different last name. Of course, that doesn't mean anything, but...
Yeah, yeah, well, we actually don't know Orville and Ma's...
They might be stepbrothers.
Yeah, we don't actually know Orville and Ma's last names, but there was a sequence in the film that he did introduce Orville as his friend, so that's why I say they're not related, but that could still be.
It could still be, or they could be stepbrothers. I don't know what the deal is.
Yeah. But he didn't introduce him as a friend. Maybe he's just embarrassed of his brother. I don't know.
I think he might be.
Orville also refers to Philo as his friend when he's talking to Echo. As he refers to Philo as his friend. Mm-hmm. So
but I mean, I wonder if it isn't because two brothers picking up women together is creepy. So
it's 1970s, Trish. They didn't give a shit.
Hey,
oh, I think they did.
Out of the creepy one, at least Philo was shooting in his age bracket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Orville wasn't.
Although, you know, there was a bunch of examples where, you know, when he's approaching her at the bar, I was like, you know, like, he is kind of being an asshole.
Like, you know,
like, he is just walking up and just being a dick to this woman.
Yep, exactly.
I mean, he puts.
She's just like, hey, I said you could sit down. I didn't say you could talk. I mean, like, that's fair.
Yeah, no, that first bit when he's trying to pick up that first girl, and she was pretty young, was where it sets up the whole movie, really, because it's where we realize Philo can't take a hint.
Yeah.
Although he does pick up on sarcasm, because he just took his buddy's, Orville's, false teeth and dropped him in her soup. So he does understand sarcasm.
Well, no, that's not really sarcasm. That's just being a dick. That's just pranksterish.
No, he understood her sarcasm.
Her sarcasm. He realized he wasn't getting anywhere. So, but yeah. See, he was being a dick, but she was being a dick too.
She was, but you know what? The problem I had with her wasn't so much that she was being a dick, was the fact that she was a sociology student that had a very clear bias in her paper. That's what I had a problem with. I'm like, you're a sociology student. You should know. You should go into your place with an open mind. With this very big bias, you're going to have a shitty paper.
Well, I guess we know what her grade is.
Yeah, very bad.
Yeah. Well, I think it's time now. Let's run the trailer and introduce this film to everybody. It is Every Which Way But Loose from 1978 and has a really interesting narrative. This is a very interesting trailer, a little different from what we normally run. And we'll be right back.
Oh, raining again.
You want to do something this evening?
Of course. Well, not this evening. It's raining now. I want to get out now.
How about taking in a new movie?
Okay. What'd you have in mind?
Hey, babe, what do you think of Clint Eastwood?
Oh, I think of him a lot.
This squirrel's ripping off peanuts, ain't you, squirrel?
Can you imagine Clint Eastwood punching out a wise guy or laying out a bunch of guys who get out of line?
Well, of course I can.
Can you picture him falling hard for a sweet young thing who's got her eye on him?
Oh, sure, that's easy.
How about him fighting for money?
Well, yeah, I guess so.
Can you see him allowing a woman to beat up on him?
Oh, now you're putting me on.
In my thoughts, you're always with me.
Well, what do you think of Clint Eastwood confiding his deepest, darkest secrets to an orangutan?
When it comes to sharing my feelings with a woman, my stomach just turns to royal gelatin.
Well, what do you think now?
Now you're really kidding me.
It's no joke. It's Eastwood like you've never seen him before. In a new film called...
Every Which Way But Loose, you turn me. Every Which Way But Loose. Inside, the fire's burning me. In my mind, you just keep turning me.
There can't be too many guys driving around this valley with an ape.
Every Which Way But Loose. Baby, there's no excuse.
You like to fight?
Oh, I used to, better than anything. Well, almost.
Inside, the fire's burning me. In my mind, you just keep turning me.
Oh, stop that, you baboon. No respect, no privacy.
Every Which Way But Loose.
Every Which Way You Look, there's action, adventure, and fun. Clint Eastwood will turn you...
Every Which Way But Loose.
Like I said, interesting trailer. I like how experimental sometimes the 70s was, and it has this couple bickering about what they're going to do on this rainy day and maybe go see this Clint Eastwood movie. It is such a bizarre, almost grindhousey way of advertising that I really
like
it. Yeah,
it kind of engaged me in a movie that I'd already seen, but it's still engaging. It's like, oh, now I want to watch it again. No, not really. It's not. Yeah. I only need to see it once every 10 years, and I'm fine.
I actually do really want to watch the sequel, though.
Oh, I do. It's a nice follow-up to this movie. And like cool. I said, you're not dealing with a lot of the character setup. You do see the Black Widows in it again.
Nice.
So they do carry over, and
were they the same ones? I
same ones,
chance.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember.
Oh, that's awesome, actually.
Yeah, the sort of the key guys are still the same guys from the first one.
And that's a cool gag, because as Beto for the entire movie is kind of embarrassing these guys, and he's collecting their bikes and selling them, and or Orville's destroying them, or Maw's blowing them up.
Oh man!
And by the end, it's really just the head guys. I never did learn his name, but Tolo, he's the only one left with a bike by the end of the movie.
And only half a bike, because he's getting dragged
by the Cadillac.
By the Cadillac, yeah.
You know, I really like the movie. So, like, the original Italian Job with Michael Caine. And I really like that movie partially because I'm a really big fan of movies that just have wanton, deliberate vehicle destruction.
There's a lot of that.
Like, you know, like not car crashes, just, you know, destroying a vehicle and recording it on a camera.
Oh, you're going to love the sequel then. You are absolutely going to love the sequel.
Yeah,
then.
They amp it up on that.
Perfect.
One. Yeah. All right.
Because, they just destroy motorcycles in this movie.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into...
There's like Kids with Fast and the Furious in it, which is really funny to me.
Okay, let's get into the casting here. And this movie was written by Jeremy Joe Kronsberg, who, as we mentioned earlier, wrote Going Ape in 1981. He also directed that movie. He also wrote the sequel to this movie, Any Which Way You Can. This is directed by James Fargo, who had been involved in, I think, 6 of Clint Eastwood's, this being the last collaboration. Most of this, I think he was director of photography, but he did direct The Enforcer, and Any Which Way They Come is something he's working on.
Wow.
Which I'm assuming not going to star Clint Eastwood. And just because I wanted to write it down, because we'll have to check this out at some point, a movie called Voyage of the Rock Aliens from 1984. Right? Does that not sound spectacular?
It does sound spectacular. That sounds like one of our Patreon episodes.
That could be. That very well could be. Starring Clint Eastwood as Philo Beto. Does anybody remember what his first movie was?
Clint Eastwood?
Yeah, Clint Eastwood. He's been, because he's 90 now. He started way back. And I caught this cameo. I was watching this movie like about a year ago. And,
now, is he a biker in it?
Nope.
No, okay. Not,
he's
not
a like, scientist.
Oh.
I think. If memory serves.
This was back in the 50s, right?
Maybe that, or he's delivering something to scientists. It would have been Return of the Creature. The sequel to Creature.
Oh, I read that. I just didn't remember.
Wow.
And I remember seeing him. I'm like, oh, wow. I didn't realize he had been in movies that early. So that was really cool to see him in that. And of course, we covered an episode, previous Clint Eastwood movie in episode 73.
Paint Your Wagon.
Yeah, man. Yes. Yeah, man.
There's a couple more people in this cast who are in that. That's one thing I noticed with Clint is he works with a lot of people fairly often, not on every film.
Yeah.
But like, going through this cast, list, like, okay, he was an enforcer, he was in Paint Your Wagon, he was in Sudden Impact. Like, there's a lot of crossover. He likes to work with the same people a lot.
Yeah, a lot of these people he worked with often, especially Sandra Locke, who was Lynn Halsey Taylor, was in Outlaw Josie Wales, and I think five other Clint Eastwood movies.
They did six movies together.
Yeah, and we'll probably cover another one. She was in, I think, the original Willard. So
yes,
that's pretty cool.
You know, I imagine it does have something to do with like Clint Eastwood specifically being interested in the rapport that people have together, like that comes across on the screen in terms of working with people multiple times.
Mm-hmm. And I think it depends on their work ethic as well, because he's really a no nonsense kind of actor director. Like, he's like, let's try and get it in one take. And he wants people who can deliver that. And I think that's why he likes to go back to people who consistently deliver for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I think that makes a difference too, even though he didn't direct this.
I think he's very hands-off. He doesn't do a lot of interaction with his actors. It's like, you guys get it, and then I'll just shoot it.
Yeah, well, in this case, it wasn't him, but I mean...
Like, late 70s was a really, really big time for like directors like Francis Ford Coppola and like George Lucas really early on.
Yeah.
Just like going out and not being interested in people acting, just being interested in people being... There's like a really big movement of that I feel like Clint Eastwood really, really latched on to. Like, a lot of his movies are like that specifically.
Well, this movie also stars Jeffrey Lewis's Orville, friend or brother. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know.
We've actually talked about him a couple of times. The first time was in episode 30, Sam's debut as a regular cast.
Yeah, Point of No Return and La Femme Nikita.
That's right. Ooh. And we did another one very recently in episode 227.
Just five episodes ago, Night of the Comet.
That's right, yeah. Night of the Comet. Beverly D'Angelo stars as Echo. And
I would be surprised we haven't talked about her before for some reason.
Well,
yeah, she's great.
Yeah, she was good in this, and you know, it's weird because I don't really recognize her when she's that young. Most people will recognize her from the recurring role in the Christmas Vacation, or just the Vacation movies. So Vacation, Christmas Vacation, Vegas Vacation. She's in all three of those movies. Walter Barnes was Tank Murdoch, and he's been around for a while. He was in High Plains Drifter, and we talked about him in episode 205.
I missed him.
Oh, well, that would have been Pete's Dragon. Roy Jensen was Woody. I'm not sure which one Woody was, but I'm guessing that we're getting into the bikers here. He was in a movie called The Car, which I really like. It's kind of a different version of Christine, this demon car, which I kind of dug. And we have talked about him before, because he was also in episode 73, which was Paint Your Wagon.
He's also Canadian from no place else but Calgary, Alberta. So I just wanted to mention that, because I think that's
pretty nice.
Cool. Oh, well, all the best people are.
Aren't we, though?
It's true. It's very true.
James McEachin was Herb, and well, I'm sure we'll talk about him again because he's in the original True Grit, and he's also in Sudden Impact. Bill McKinney was Dallas. Man, he was in some stuff. He was in Deliverance and First Blood.
Whoa.
Right? William O'Connell was Elmo, also in Paint Your Wagon, episode 73, also in Outlaw Josie Wales. I think he was even in High Plains Drifter with our next actor, John Quaid, who was Cholo. He was the head biker, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
Is that the guy with the horns?
No, he would have been with the ascot.
Yeah,
the ascot, right. And all the Nazi stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I love the parody that they make of the sort of the biker culture with it. Please forgive us bikers, but yeah, they were funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, like the Black Widows are one of my favorite movie gangs I've seen in a while.
Dan Vadas was also in this as Frank. He would have been brought over from the Italian spaghetti westerns during Clint Eastwood's time over there, because he was in probably the most memorable was Hercules the Invincible, one of the spaghetti...
Sword and Sandal.
Spaghetti Sword and Sandal. There we go.
Yeah.
Gregory Walcott was Putnam, and we talked about him in episode 72.
Plan 9 from Outer Space!
Oh, nice.
Space.
Ruth Gordon was Ma. She's a very classic actress. She's been around a long time at this point. She was actually in Rosemary's Baby and was Maude in Harold and Maude.
Yeah, yes. I only just watched Harold and Maude last week for the first time.
Oh, really? What'd you think?
Oh, I love it.
I love that one. It's so good.
I'll be honest, I don't remember it, but I know my parents liked it, and I'm sure I've seen it at some point.
It's very morbid, but yeah, Ruth Gordon was incredible in that movie.
Yeah, yes. And I have one more cast member to make, because he is very important. Manus the Orangutan is Clyde. He had a short but memorable stint in film. He was also in Cannonball Run 2 and Going Ape. And he also made appearances on Cheers and Fantasy Island TV shows. And
Pretty good career for an orangutan.
Not bad.
I did a bit of a double feature with Any Which Way You Can. And Clyde is played by a different ape in the second one.
Oh,
it is, yeah.
And it's very, if you watch them back to back, it's very noticeable. But with a 2-year spread, you probably wouldn't notice.
No, you do notice, though, you're right, because I did watch them back to back. I'm like, that's not the same Clyde.
Yeah, that's a very different ape.
The Clyde in the second one has a lot more to do.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And I think that makes a difference.
Yeah, I think Manus actually retired after this film.
I think so, yeah.
I think Clint, I was reading a couple things about the orangutan. One, Clint Eastwood saying that he was the most naturalistic actor he ever worked with, but you just had to do it within the first couple takes because he got bored easily.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then he would start acting up.
Yeah. And that was going to lead into, the next bit where he mostly behaved, other than one scene in which Clint Eastwood was driving, mm-hmm. in which, the orangutan grabbed onto him. And then he had to be talked down by his handlers over loudspeakers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is potentially a lethal situation at that point.
Oh, yeah.
But also, for everyone listening out there, this is one of the ape movies in which, not abused at all, treated very well.
Oh, yeah. Oh. No, that animal is treated very well.
Yeah.
No, sorry, and I just looked at one thing. This is Manus's first movie.
Oh, this is his first. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. He goes on to do, Cheers and Going Ape and Cannonball Run 2, which were later.
Oh, yeah, I guess Going Ape was later.
Yeah.
Cheers with 80s, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I got it backwards. My mistake.
Oh, no, it's no worries. I was just curious myself at what else he'd been in, so I was just looking.
Yeah, a lot of charisma, that ape.
Yeah, I found myself he's not getting him much to do, and there were times where I felt like people weren't reacting to him as quickly as they should have been, where he's people are watching the fights, and he's walking along the top there on the truck, and nobody's really paying much attention to Clyde.
In the first movie, Clyde feels more like a device rather than a character.
Yeah, he feels, honestly, it feels like a pet sometimes.
Yeah, and that's where the sequel sort of does him credit, because he is a character in the sequel, far more so than he is in the original.
Because, I think that, aside from everything else, one of the really big keys to the movie is the relationship between Philo and Clyde.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they do a little backstory there, and I thought that might actually be a great place to kind of set our movie, is when those two meet. Because I thought that was a more interesting story than basically this a love story, catfish story that was going on.
I think that actually probably would be a good way to approach doing a newer, a remake of this movie.
True.
Because you still need the human story as well as the story between Clyde and Philo. But yeah, I think I like where you're going there, Jay. Get rid of the whole chase story and sort of.
Well, you could still merge them all together.
Yeah. Yeah, but make it less stalkery with an origin story.
Yeah, exactly. Because now you've got this guy who just lives for fighting, and the animal brings out his compassion, and he's rescuing the animal from a bad situation, and Clyde, and they become partners. It's not just a pet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what I found amazing about this is when I first started watching it, I haven't watched it in years. And I didn't realize that sort of Clyde's introduced as being already with Philo at this point. I, for some reason, thought it included how they got together. And that's what I got confused when I was watching this.
Yeah, and it only does as a story.
Yeah.
I was actually a little surprised how long into the movie it took before he talked about, you know, the elephant in the room being how he got Clyde, why he has an orangutan hanging out with him all the time.
Yeah.
But I actually thought that was kind of deftly done because you're expecting it. And then so there's sort of the anticipation as to like, well, when are we going to find out how he got Clyde? The other way to do it is to set that up so it happens organically through the movie rather than waiting for the story to tell us.
You know, they say show, don't tell.
Yes. Yeah. Especially in film.
It does make me wonder what the legality of having an ape in the 70s was. I think this town was a little more used to it. It feels like a small town. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows each other, so they're just kind of used to this situation and
it's
tolerate
LA.
It. Oh, it is L.A. It's not a small town. It feels like a small town the way
they
run it.
Yeah.
But it feels like it's the outskirts of L.A.
Yeah, Palomino was a real bar that was actually really famous for a long time because it was sort of where country music stars used to go to spread their wings, as it were. And famous people started there. And even some famous rock bands played there even after they reached the height of their fame. Like the Chili Peppers played there after they were famous. There are a few other rock bands that played there because it was sort of this sort of iconic place to play.
Really?
But it's gone now. It closed in 1995.
Oh, that's too bad.
I think it was like the CBGB of LA.
It was very much. It was like the CBGB of country music.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, everybody played there apparently. So.
Oh, it's funny. You guys are starting to graze against my idea a little bit. But we'll get there. Now, as I said before, this is kind of a catfish story. He sees this woman in this club after his first colossal failure, as we talked about earlier. He makes moves on her. He's stunned by her voice and her looks, makes a hit on her at the bar, and she's running a racket. She's just catfishing, getting the guy close so she can get some cash out of him. She does want to open up her own place. She actually did have a name for it. Like, I think it was like Lynn Halsey Taylor's Honky Tonk Bar or something like that.
It was Fountain.
Fountain.
Water fountain or something.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. Which is funny. Halsey Taylor, I think, is named after like a toiletries company.
No, it's named after a water fountain company.
They do water fountains
and water, and that's why they called it that.
Oh, okay. That's kind of fun.
I know, I looked that up.
That is literally an example of somebody sitting at a desk and saying, what should I name this character? And then looking around the room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically,
working it into the script.
Yeah, basically, the way this movie works is Lynn Halsey Taylor is come here, get away. And when she finally gets the money, she's trying to scare him away, and he won't get the hint.
Well, yeah. She bails.
She does bail, and then the rest of it's kind of this road trip to go find her, and Philo's short temper gets him into fights, or he just deliberately schedules some when they run out of money. But he'll start a bar fight, and that's when the two cops get humiliated and start chasing him. Yeah. And the bikers have been constantly humiliated by him, and so the whole gang goes after him. That's where the gags start popping up, is every time they catch up with him or they're on their trip, we start getting those gags of him beating up more or destroying more of their bikes or destroying the cops' hunter truck.
Yes. That's those cops, it was weird. I don't know, the cops I mostly forgot about because they only pop up very briefly here and there.
Yeah. Because this is such a comedy, you actually expect a happy ending, that he gets the girl, but he doesn't.
Oh, and see, I love that. Yeah. I didn't want that to happen.
No, like, yeah, I thought that was great. She's like, this is the scam. This has always been a scam. You just can't take the hint, you dumbass.
Right? You follow me across the country. That's a bad sign. She's just not that into you.
Now, Sam, I don't remember what happened in the sequel with her.
She shows up at the Palomino again. And they talk, and she confesses that she didn't really want to push him away, blah, 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 because it was because of her manager, that kind of thing.
Boo.
And I know people at home can't see me right now, but I'm shaking my head.
Yeah, and that's the only weak point in the film. She didn't even need to really be in it. They could have had a new love interest for him to make it work.
There was a whole thing about like the mafia embedding. And it was just a whole thing.
Yes, and that was fine. It's just, but the kidnapping of her, and that's why I think they kind of shoehorned her into the story, was because they needed the damsel in distress. Yeah. I think they should have kidnapped Clyde, and that would have worked even better.
That would have made more sense.
Oh, and then just trying to hold on to an orangutan and keep him calm.
There would have been so many great jokes there.
Yeah.
He's had Clyde for Clyde has been with him. It's his longest relationship.
Yes.
Well, that's something that we can merge some of these ideas. The
rapport between Philo and Clyde reminded me of Han Solo and Chewbacca. Star Wars coming out a year prior. I'm not going to say that there was an influence, but, you know.
Just leave it out there, I fear.
Watching this movie, I can see how it influenced other movies that came on later. I can definitely tell, like, the Jeffrey Lewis character where he turns his hat around when stuff's going down.
I love that.
That's definitely an over-the-top Sylvester Stallone movie reference.
Oh, absolutely.
Or Stallone stole it from this movie.
Yeah, it would have been the other way around.
No, that's what I meant. Sorry, I flipped it. But yeah, that's what I'm absolutely sure Sylvester Stallone used it from this movie.
There are some like little key trademark things. And this one is credited with starting off the whole ape movie craze.
Man, it's going to start off the whole invasion of the remake. Remape craze.
And nice. So it begins, and everybody thought it would be me first.
Re-ape craze?
We are going to be re-aping all month long.
You betcha. We're going to be aping largely successful stuff into what we want.
Now, okay, here's my pitch, and chime in with your ideas here. Now, Sam's probably going to be on board with this fairly quickly. I kind of wanted to keep it in the late 70s and 80s, but move it away from the country music part and go a little more punk.
Also kind of reading my mind.
Okay.
Nice.
I kind of figured you'd be on board with this because it still plays to the surviving on the streets any which way you can, or every which way, but least. and it changes, just doing the punk music stuff does change the feel of it a bit and gives it a little more, you can lean into the anger and angst of it a little bit, as we talked about with possibly doing the origin story at the beginning and rescuing Clyde and pulling him out, this character of Philo, out of the darkness that he's been mired in, hanging out in these dingy places, getting into fights for money. And you can still have his buddy Orville. People still have friends in these situations.
Would you be like moving the setting and locale, or would you be, because I know that there also was a little bit of a punk scene in LA.
Mm-hmm. A little bit. Black Flag.
Yeah, there was a lot in that era.
There was a lot in that era, yeah.
Although Black Flag would have been Washington, I think, wasn't it?
Nope, Black Flag was LA, DC? So were the Dead Kennedys. Henry's from Washington, but he moved to LA with Black Flag when they asked him to join.
Right.
Okay.
I want to put it in the center of that kind of scene. So
that totally fucks my casting, but
mine are fucked.
But what kind of occupation would a Clint Eastwood fist fighting type character? I feel like this movie's strangely known as like a trucker movie. There's not that much. Like, he is a trucker. That's his job.
They show him as a trucker at the beginning, and that's it. The only truck driving you see. Mm-hmm. That's how they tell you he's a trucker, and that's it.
I feel like, you know, his job wasn't trucker in a remake. I feel like people would be upset for some reason.
You know what? Because that was a trend in that era of trucker movies.
Yeah.
Now it's not. Like, we don't get trucker movies now, and people don't associate with that right now. It's just not a trend. I mean, it's not saying it's not viable. It's just
that's true.
Yeah,
it might be just like country music now. It might see a resurgence of popular choice.
But what I'm saying is Jeff is correct in that people get precious with things that they remember.
Oh, yes. Well, yeah. I mean, we encounter that all the time, but we can't.
Oh, totally.
We can't just stick to a formula and
because
we're precious about a film.
Oh no, I get that. But I agree with Jeff's point.
Yeah.
All this to say for everyone at home, I guess when Every Which Way But Loose came out, it was very popular with the masses, right?
Yeah.
Everyone loved it. It was made for the people.
Yeah.
And sorry if you love country music at home and you're a trucker and you're a small niche percentage of a population that this movie is hyper for. But if you were to remake it, you would want it to be for the widest audience, which is, I think, bigger than truckers and country music.
Well, and we can do more with Clyde now. You don't even have to bring in a real animal at this point to do stuff. We've seen how Rise of the Planet of the Apes can make a very convincing ape movie with no actual apes in it.
Yeah. Oh, man. You know, if we were to do mocap with a remake, you know, Clyde would have to be like full on, like a buddy cop type thing.
Well, you can give him a little more personality without being like go overboard with it as well, and make him do things that maybe would be a lot harder to train an ape to do to begin with. nor do you want to put an animal in harm's way. So,
absolutely.
You know, as we learned with all of the recent Planet of the Apes movies, strangely, orangutans look more lifelike than other apes that you can animate. Like, the orangutans in those movies were easily the most lifelike out of all the apes that they animated.
Right.
That works to our advantage then.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Do you like the setting here of maybe the 70s punk era?
So the thing I'm thinking with the 70s punk era is like that would have been really popular with, like, you know, lower class, you know, angry. I'm just trying to think of it would make sense for somebody to make, you know, to do fist fighting as a living and be in that. Yeah, totally.
It does kind of screw up the catfish part because he's not going to look like somebody who's going to have money. But neither did Clint, really.
No, he didn't.
Yeah.
That's pretty much why he was doing the boxing.
Yeah, well,
making jack shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is Philo was, I think, is based on seeing both movies, he's an odd jobber. He just sort of picks up work wherever work is.
Yeah. And
he's a champ.
Yeah, he really is. Yeah. But he's a physical laborer, so like he's a day laborer.
And he sold those bikers' bikes, and that's the money he gives Lynn Halsey Taylor. Yeah.
Yes, don't forget the Halsey Taylor.
Gotta say the whole name every time.
Well, he keeps repairing vehicles, and that's, I think, what he wants to do, but that's all his spare time that you see him doing, is he's always under a vehicle.
I can totally see him being a mechanic on the side.
Yeah, and that's kind of how certainly a punker would be, a kind of a day jobber.
Yeah. Right?
He'd show up on a site and they'd sort of pick guys to do the work, and then he'd get a day or two's worth of pay, and then he'd go on to the next odd job, or he'd go off to a fight if he can't get a day job.
You know what? I kind of wonder if this would be something more along the lines that he'd be sort of an aspiring punk rocker. Like, he's in on the scene and he's doing these day jobs because he wants to do gigs. I mean, a regular job wouldn't fit in that.
I kind of like that idea, but at the same time, it starts to overcomplicate the story.
If you want to be in a band, generally you're going to be doing that kind of thing at night anyway. So if you're doing a day job, it's not going to affect you wanting to be in a band.
Well, I don't know. There's a whole bunch of those guys who weren't doing like regular jobs because they had to be hustling all the time.
And they had to be able to just sort of pick up and go whenever they wanted to.
Absolutely. Like, if you had to go on tour, you had to like quit all those jobs. And eventually the good jobs during the day just dry up because nobody wants to hire you.
Well, that does kind of play to
erratic.
If he's a trucker who's doing these odd fights around the area, you can still arrange that around a tour.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, again, overcomplicating it because now he's a musician and he's a fighter and he's a trucker. And, you know, yes, musicians kind of do that, but then we're losing the story. We're focused too much on what he's doing and less on what's
happening. I'm losing the boxing thing completely. I probably wasn't clear. The boxing thing for me goes out the window. He's fighting for fun, but the gigs are what he wants to do. Because I don't give a shit that he's a boxer.
Well,
I don't. But
I feel like the Fight Club aspect is the aspect that's going to bring in the audience.
Well, and that's part of shows that he's the tough guy. He's the toughest guy. Like, they keep talking about Tank and that culmination and where they finally meet. And he leaves Tank with his reputation intact out of compassion, which is something he learns on the road.
Oh, see, I don't think it's compassion. He's doing it because he doesn't want to be another dead-end guy called Tank.
I think both things are true. Like, no, I don't think he sees Tank as a dead end, but he doesn't want to be the new Tank.
The next Tank. He doesn't want to be the new Tank. He's like, this is going to be the rest of my fucking life, and I don't want it.
Yeah, he doesn't want to be. He was fine with his reputation until he sees this aging boxer. And
his reputation is everything.
It means everything too. I mean, I don't think he wants to humiliate him, but I don't think he wants that either.
Oh, I think I don't think he wants to humiliate him. I don't think he wants to give him back his name and his attitude. I think he just doesn't want it.
There was compassion there. He kept looking at him going, there was pity in his eyes in that final fight.
Yeah, like, and that's see that him make pity a decision was, that this is your fucking life. Him. I feel so sorry for you. I don't want it.
Oh, that's not how I interpret it. I mean, I do agree he did not want it. Once he started hearing the roar of the crowd and seeing is this what I'm going to be in another 15, 20 years? He didn't want that, but he didn't want to take the one thing away from this guy that he still had.
But the thing is, that was the easiest way to not end up like him.
Sure. Yeah. You lose the fight.
Yeah. I didn't get it. Like, I don't think any of it was about making sure Tank got everything he needed back.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Sam, but those two do become friends in the next movie, right?
They do not. Tank's not even in the next movie.
I thought he was in the next movie.
No.
Nope.
No, there is another fight. It's another guy who's got an even worse reputation than Tank. He's from the East Coast, so Philo'd never really heard of him. But yeah, I mean, I agree to the extent that, yes, he does see that he wants more than to be just an underground fighter. He felt sorry, genuinely sorry for Tank, because Tank's an old, washed-up guy. And that's, you're right, there's two sides to that. One is he doesn't want to be that person, and the other is that he felt genuinely sorry for this guy who was that person.
Yeah, this is part like Smokey and the Bandit and part Rocky.
Yeah. Yeah, totally, totally. If there's to be a remake, like kind of the nature of this movie, and I imagine the sequel as well, is kind of a little like episodic. I feel like you would be able to do a remake that's not like remaking the movie itself, but it's like another chapter in this person's life, kind of like Mad Max Fury Road, you know?
Well, I mean, this does feel like a slice out of Philo Battle's life. That is his presentation, absolutely.
Yeah, like that's what I like about that idea, is like you could easily have, like, you know, he lives in the area, you could see him, you know, just ambling about where the money is going to take him. Mm-hmm. And if he has good opportunity to make some money in a different part of LA for a while and be in the punk scene, you know, why not?
Yeah, no, I kind of like that. Like, it's this type of format is still fairly rare in film and can be interesting. So, like,
especially because
it's really rare in comedies. So,
yeah, and I don't know if this is the case in the sequel, and let me know, but in the first one, like, I'm not really big into country music, but I know that there is a couple country music stars that performed in the movie.
And same in the sequel, yes.
Yeah, so, like, that would be a cool aspect to feature, like, to have, like, it's kind of slash musical, like, it's not as featured in movies anymore, but, like, where you'd have a movie and takes a little break to feature a band, like, you'd want to keep that in it.
Yeah, it'll be a little bit trickier because they'd have to be sort of imitations of the real bands or big bands, because, I mean, most of the punk bands from the 1970s aren't around anymore, or if they are, they're really old and you can tell.
No, yeah. It would be like Vinyl, that show on HBO. Did you ever watch that?
Not yet, no. It's one of those shows on my list.
You know, it was too bad. It got canceled. But one cool thing about it was, you know, it was really a show to have people dress up as older, like, rockers and like have a story featuring a rock star that somebody is acting as, and that aspect is kind of interesting.
Oh, now I want to cast somebody to play Henry Rollins.
You could, yeah, why not?
I still have no problem with the existing old punkers in different parts around town.
Oh, totally.
That would be kind of cool. Like, use Henry as maybe the chief of police, or he owns the bar, and somebody else, Iggy Pop, shows up and is like a love.
Chief of police is great.
Iggy Pop can be the love interest of Ma.
Yes, yeah. Or he could just replace Ma and be Pa.
Well, we could do that too.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
There's something about Ma that I just like. She's so lovable. I don't want to get rid of her.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I don't either.
But that would be kind of fun to kind of move it in that regard. And you can merge the story where he gets Clyde, then he gets entangled with this catfish scheme.
All he said is that, you know, Clyde was part of a roadside zoo, and then he won him in a fight. Like, that's pretty open.
It is pretty open. And that could be the first 20 minutes of your film.
Totally.
Well, I would say he'd rescued him in an animal fight. That this was, like, animal combat sports. And
like he was there to fight for, like, man-on-man fist fight.
Yeah.
But there was sort of a pre-fight with, like animals and stuff like that. Like, almost like a road show fight where you have opening acts.
Yeah, which gets him really angry. And that's where he can rescue him out of that situation.
Oh, yeah. I could have him, like...
I like that, actually.
This pisses him off so much where he basically almost kills some guy.
Mm. Yeah, like, you have, like, a tight 20-minute beginning where it's like, yeah, he signs up for a fight. But, yeah, exactly what Sam said. There's, like... a pre-fight with animals, there's maybe other animal fights, lots of people betting, and you just have a quick tight thing where he hustles the guy to win Clyde and then, you know, walks out of there.
Yeah, well, that's actually because you could have sort of like, they have like the cockfight first, and they have a dog fight, then they have an ape fight before leading on to the main event of a man-on-man kind of fight.
It's the Black Widows who do this.
Ah, there we go, ties them in a little bit better.
Yeah. So once he's hustled them and gotten the ape out, now he's on their radar.
Yeah, and every time they see him, they hassle him, and he ends up taking out one of their bikes or destroying one of their bikes.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. I actually love the idea that they're like this pseudo-threat that really is not a threat at all.
Yes, that's what makes it fun, and we can establish that right at the beginning, like Jay said, with them being the ones who run this underground fighting events.
Yeah. And the two cops, could be the guys who are getting paid off on the sly, so these events can be run without any hassle.
And that gives them more motivation too, rather than getting just roughed up in a bar.
Yeah,
you could have a little joke right before it would cut to opening credits, where he's like gonna walk away with Clyde, and the guy who's running the whole fight thing, he's like, hey, can't walk out of here, you got to fight me. And then he just one punches him, and then you cut to opening credits.
Nice. Yeah, just this punch right into the screen.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I really like the off-kilter sense of humor in this movie.
And you definitely want to keep that and the gags, because it is very gag-heavy. I mean, not heavy enough, but that's really what drives the humor are the gags.
Yeah, and you can change them and update them as well. Like, my two favorite gags is, like, the ones I ran in the show and the one you'll hear at the end of the show where I mentioned with Ma and the cops. And the cops again, and there's this whole wordplay with numbers. Well, is there 602 the same as our 341? And it just, the whole thing, it feels like an old vaudevillian Abbott Costello sketch.
It really does.
Which I really enjoyed.
Oh, it's funny because they're shooting and missing all the time.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're not good shots, that's for sure.
Just also thinking, like with Ma, where she was shooting and exploding the motorcycles and
stuff.
Oh,
that big.
Yeah, that was like so good.
It wasn't just a rifle. It was like that. Yeah. That thing could take down an elephant.
Yeah, and it was like just shots of Ma just shooting this thing, and then all of this like handheld cam, like war footage style shot things of people running around with like vehicles exploding, and
it was a lot of fun. The only thing that could have made that funnier is like showing a shot of her as she pulled the trigger and it kept like pushing her backwards, and she'd have to sort of get her balance again because she was tiny. That gun would have just knocked her on her ass every time she fired it.
I need a Saving Private Ryan moment of a confused biker picking up his handlebars.
Yes.
Yeah.
With like the string music like swelling where he's like, and he goes slow-mo. They're looking around going, God.
But no, it's good.
I thought there was a missed opportunity where we keep getting Ma getting taken to her driver's test, and then we'd cut away with them driving back. God damn it. And we never actually see how bad of a driver she is.
Yeah. I was actually thinking if it was going to be a sequel, because I wouldn't want to recast Ma, if she was not going to be in it and it was going to be a sequel, you would just have a thing where she died and she's old. Someone's like, oh, how'd she pass away? Be like, oh, it was a horrible wreck. It's like this terrible thing. You know, she drove into a gas station.
She died the way she lived, angry and wanting to drive.
Yeah, exactly. She turned left into a one-way lane. Just this big, crazy thing.
There were Oreos everywhere.
Exactly.
I want it to be like she accidentally turned left, then ended up into like the NASCAR arena. And several people is like, we lost so many men that day.
Yeah, I feel like it would be good. I wouldn't want to recast Ma, but if she was going to die, I think she needs to die via a car accident, obviously.
Yes. She left her glasses at home.
Yeah.
Because they do have that at the end where when she wears her glasses, she can see. But she
quite well, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She picks up a guy there, but then you never see him in the sequel either.
Exactly, right?
The driving test guy was quite intrigued by her.
Yes. Yeah. Giant teeth.
Yes.
Yeah. New paw. This is that's his name. There's Ma and New Paw.
Any other angles you want to put in here? I think Orville, as the way he functions, still works.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think that one of the things that has to change is Lynn Halsey Taylor's manager. I think that's probably the weakest point in the whole film, is because they keep referring to him.
And we never really see him.
We never really see him. The only time that you really see him is at the end, and then the one point where he sticks the shotgun out the window of the trailer.
Yeah, and she always says, hey, that's my boyfriend, and that's kind of how she scares guys away when she brings them home, is, hey, my boyfriend's here, but he doesn't mind.
Yeah, it's kind of it doesn't quite work.
No.
I think that he needs to be really bad, not this weaselly-looking, like, slimy...
Yeah, now, if we're moving it into a punk situation of the abusive manager who's taking all the money, then we could see where maybe it's a forced scam.
And where it makes more sense, where her reluctance to be around him is because she does like him, mm-hmm. not because she doesn't like him. And I would almost like say merge the tank and the manager characters and get rid of that whole storyline.
Well, we could have like the manager set that up because she does reference this fighter and knowing this big fighter. So in a way, it's kind of a hired, let's take this guy out and he dies in the fight type of situation. Now, that raises the stakes with Philo and get her out of the situation. I still want her to leave because the whole thing's all fucked up for her. She just wants to get the fuck out of there when it's all over and she's free from that situation.
Yeah, if I agree. I don't want a happy ending, but I do want her to have more motivation for not sticking around, and she's trying to protect him rather than trying to get away from it.
Yeah, and it does redeem her character somewhat as well.
Yeah. Without giving into the happily ever after.
Yeah. Now, Trish, I want you to chime in here because I kind of want to work this in a way where it's not just, oh, poor helpless Lynn Taylor Halsey.
Oh, yeah, no. I don't know. Like, going away to save him is, like, a good idea. But, I mean, honestly, I think she can leave because she just isn't interested.
Yeah. Like, she's not
the
best character.
That's absolutely adequate. I mean, you can actually say, like, no, she can tell him, like, I have this big dream to do this thing.
Well, no, I think she likes him, but she doesn't want to be with him. I think you're right.
No. Yeah,
she genuinely likes him, but she's not she doesn't like him. She likes him enough that she doesn't want him to get hurt.
No, her career aspirations are a lot bigger than her romantic ones.
Well, like she has her own dreams, and like being with him would be just throwing those all away.
Yeah, and she's with this manager willingly because he gets her the things that she needs, right?
Yeah,
she doesn't like him and she doesn't trust him, but until she has everything she wants, she's going to stay with him.
She's not afraid of him when she can, but she's like, I just need to get to where I need to be until I am powerful enough. I don't need this guy anymore.
Well, Philo's a dumb guy, so if we have him doing this in the thought that he is rescuing her when she doesn't need rescuing, that brings us back to the original angle. And
but it just makes more sense.
He really is the guy who views himself as like the uber masculine. Yeah.
In a way, like, this is the same situation he saw Clyde in, right? Except she's fine with it.
Well,
willingly, no less.
She's not caged. She's not a prisoner like Clyde is.
She doesn't like her manager.
But he sees it that way.
But he makes her money.
That's the thing. Yeah, no, I get that. But she's like not a prisoner. She's like, she's playing her game until she can get out.
She's using every man in her life the way she wants to use them. There's nothing she's doing unwillingly.
Yeah, but the thing about it too is it's not about using the men. It's about getting what she needs. Like, these men think that they own her and she's getting what she needs out of them.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. Yes.
Exploiting what they believe is true because that's the only way they know how to operate. And this is the 70s. So let's be honest.
Every man in here is a misogynist, even in the original.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So it's like, she's property to me and she's like, oh no, I ain't, buddy. Like, she knows how to play it. This is the only game she can play at this time.
No, like this movie is like even the opening scene with Clint Eastwood in that bar, like, it is shades away from like, hey, you do what I tell you, woman.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
It's pretty ridiculous.
And we got one more character I want to handle, and I think she needs to be introduced earlier in the film, maybe as a bar star.
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about.
Miss Echo?
What was that? I did that on purpose because they do that in the movie, the whole movie.
Oh, yes.
They always say her name twice. So she gets introduced as Echo and they're like, wait, what? And she'll go, Echo. So that's the very subtle gag of her name always being repeated like an echo.
Yeah. I like the idea of her already being Orville's partner.
Yeah.
Right from the get go. Cause she's a badass.
She is.
I like,
right? But she didn't get enough time.
No. I love the bit with the gun where she's like, I just wanted you guys to know that that wasn't an accident, that first one.
Yes, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
I don't want the...
She rescues them most of the time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. I mean, the only scene that's sort of you'd lose by introducing her early is the scene where she first sort of meets Clyde, which was funny.
Mm-hmm.
Where they haven't told her yet. For some reason, she's traveling around with an orangutan and sitting right behind her, and they haven't told her that there's an orangutan in the camper.
Yeah.
So when she goes out to pee, and all of a sudden she runs into Clyde, it's like, oh shoot, we forgot to tell her about Clyde. That was kind of funny, but by losing it, we're not losing much.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we can still have it too if our opening is going to be the origin story. I don't know if we're going to have a time jump into where they've been together a long time, but we could feasibly have him.
I mean,
bring,
you know, they could have been
Clyde
together. Like, you don't know how long. Well, does he say how long he's had Clyde?
It's been a few years.
Yeah. I have an idea, though. You can turn that joke a bit on its head. They do a time jump. She's been with him for a while. And, like, she goes to hang out with Clyde. And what the surprise is with the guys is they come in and she's, like, done Clyde up all in punk rock stuff. And they're like,
oh, I love that.
Nice.
I really like that. That's yeah.
Punk orangutan.
Yeah, I like the idea of sort of establishing them as a family unit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Even though, like, Orville and Philo aren't brothers, yeah. At least not, definitely not in our remake, they're not brothers.
Yeah, no, I'm mixing I want to mix.
There's this whole thing that is kind of like missing in like current society where I think it was a lot more common back in the 70s, I think, for two men just to be such good friends that they could just live together and share everything, but it is just completely platonic.
Well, yeah, the 70s, especially the mid to late 70s, you kind of sort of saw a lot more of that family you choose rather than the family you have.
Yeah definitely.
Mm-hmm. And we're seeing
it was also, again, this whole thing where it was like either you lived at home until you got married, blah, blah, blah. That was it. Like there was no kind of living with men and women living together without being married.
Now, the 70s, yeah. No, you saw a fair bit of that, actually. I mean, that was after the.
But when you're making a family film, you don't.
But there's that, true. Yeah. When you're talking about in terms of film, yes. Yeah. But part of it, too, is Philo lives next to his mother to make sure she's taken care of. Part of it too is he is interested in making sure his mother's taken care of, and he's fucking afraid of her too.
Well, he's only interested until it's time to go find a woman. He takes off at the drop of a hat then.
Well, and there's that too, right? But he does tell her what's going on.
He does. Right. She complains about it and she bitches.
Of course, but she complains about everything, so.
I know. Leave an old woman by herself.
Hey, with an orangutan, you know, I've seen some helicopter footage. Sometimes it doesn't pan out well.
Yeah.
She's fun, and Clyde, we can do a lot more gags with it, with mocap for sure. Yeah. And yeah. I mean, she keeps mentioning the stealing of Oreos. I want to see him eat them.
Right?
Yeah, but
and
yeah,
looking all innocent, like he didn't do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
I also
want to
get like a bellyache, like the double stuffed Oreos. He's had way too much sugar.
Oh yeah, they just find him in this food coma of Oreos.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's also that part too where like he hears Orville screaming because Clyde is like messing with the car on the jack.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked that bit. There, again, the gags work, and there's just make sure that they contextually they work in the story as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing I actually really like about the humor in the movie is I think a lot of the humor is unexpected somehow. Like, you don't realize that they're setting up a joke until you realize that it's a joke, because not the whole movie is a joke. And there's a lot of things that are set up, but sometimes they subvert your expectations with setting up something that you think is the same as everything else, but it's going to have a punchline.
Well, and that's like the scene where Philo beats up the cops in the bar, and he says, "Somebody call the cops."
Yes.
And like, totally, the bartender says, "They are the cops."
I love that.
You're
bit.
Not expecting that.
Yeah, right? You don't know it's a joke until it happens right there, and there it is. It's like, oh, this whole thing was
Philo, like,
setting up a gag.
And takes off. It's like, oh, oops.
Which is a normal response after you kick the shit out of a cop.
Absolutely.
And that's the funny thing about Philo, is his reactions to most circumstances are pretty normal.
Yeah.
Aside from the scene where he chases the bikers with his truck, that's a little excessive. But it makes more sense if we set them up as the ones who had Clyde in the first place.
Well, that shows you his impatience with people, too. It's like he's not going to take your shit, and his reactions are extreme. That's why he gets in trouble. That's why he crosses country to follow this chick he's enamored with.
Yeah.
Like, he feels things in extremes.
Yes. Well,
and you know, and who, like, honestly, who messes with a person driving a truck with a freaking, ape? In the passenger seat, they're like, "Hey, this looks like the guy we gotta mess with."
When you talk about extremes, ultimately, this does sound like a bipolar hero.
You got to have the gag in the right turn Clyde thing, which actually is a sequel, but you got to have that in there with the monkey punch.
Yes.
I mean, chances are, in our version, we're gonna have a lot more monkey punching.
Oh yes.
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
I certainly, yeah, especially during the interactions with the biker gang, just because Clyde remembers them.
Yes.
Right? And doesn't like them. So he's
constantly messing with them.
Yes, exactly. And this is where Philo really can't control him, is when he sees one of the bikers, because his instinctive response to them is so visceral that he can't help himself.
Yeah, yeah. Like, but he's picking up bikes and throwing it at them.
Yeah.
But I also think Philo can't control himself around the bikers, too.
I totally agree.
He doesn't like how they treated him.
And he just doesn't like their general...
Their whole thing with animals. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like
that's exactly it. Is he doesn't like them for anything.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think we got most of the angles figured out. I mean, the structure is fairly good. Go ahead, Sam.
I was going to say, the only thing we sort of haven't addressed is we talked about the cops being sort of the dirty cops, but how do we work them into the rest of the story?
Well, like I said, they are keeping the initial, when he gets Clyde, they're there at the beginning where he wins Clyde in the fight, and they don't want to let Clyde go. Philo wins. They don't want to let it go. So that's when a big brawl starts out, and they're trying to keep Philo from leaving, and then that's when Philo kicks the shit out of them, too.
Yeah.
Okay, and so then we're gonna have a fairly short time jump then, because then we
yeah jump. I think it's gonna happen. Everything's gonna happen a lot quicker. Then we can have Echo still have her first reaction to it, and later on you can still have the let's decorate the monkey scene.
Exactly, that would be so fun. Monkey makeover.
Yeah, because that would be really fun.
Yeah, and then you can have somebody chime in. He's not a monkey.
So one of the good gags
that would be good.
In the movie. Mm-hmm. Sorry, one of the best gags in the movie is everybody showing up at Ma's house and then at the gas station, right? Where like you have the bikers and then you have the cops showing up, and vice versa. Like there's that sort of running gag where they're always just a step behind him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're always just a step behind each other.
I love when Philo's passing him on the way home and seeing the results of his handiwork.
Yeah.
and the bikers have got nothing left, and the truck has been dragged out of the lake.
The lake, yeah. So, yeah, and I like all of that, and because it sort of feeds the story and it kind of keeps it light, especially if we're going into the darker aspect of the punk culture, which can be quite dark if you're not careful.
Yeah, no, I kind of want to mix it of the original movie with like SLC punk.
Yeah, Salt Lake City punk.
Yeah, with that kind of combination of those two aspects.
Well, and I like the fact that I think some of the darkness is also tempered in that Philo has done some things because he cares for Clyde. Mm-hmm. Like, there's this kindness that's there.
Well, I think that Philo's character overall is, like, he's just a guy who wants to do right by people. And because he does right by other people, he wants other people to do right by him. And then when they don't, that's when he takes his fists out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or his false teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, these two, specifically Clyde and Philo, they need each other. Like, both were in dark places and came up into a lighter situation by having this companionship with each other, like this unconditional companionship, which he's kind of looking for in the girls, but doesn't really need. Like, maybe sexual aspect is what's driving him, but he's looking for something he's already got with his partner in Clyde.
And that's part of the lesson that he learns in the movie, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. Is that I have somebody that takes care of me and I take care of. I'm not going to go looking for it. If it happens, it happens kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I think the other sign of it too is like this whole thing is his relationship with Clyde is like, no, we're together as like a pair because we are. It's like, I can't make somebody love me. I can't make somebody come to me. I don't want to, if I want a partner, I want a partner, not a pet.
Exactly.
That's what I need to understand as a dude.
Yeah. One more question. Are we keeping the scene where they get Clyde laid?
Oh,
I don't know.
I think that's funny and still plays in a punk situation. I think it plays even better breaking into a zoo.
Yeah, because it seems more punk than country, right?
It does. It totally does.
Okay, I just want to make sure we were keeping that in because I think it's a funny scene in the movie.
Yeah, I would keep.
Now, one thing that I do kind of think, it's thinking about it a little bit more, is I don't think you would be able to get away with motion capture, just for the very fact that the first two movies were very, very low budget, and that's kind of why they were successful. So I don't think you'd be able to really...
I think you'd have to do a combination.
Yeah.
I think Sam's right, like a combination of the two where you can have an orangutan on set and then a mocap version of it to keep the budget down for the more action-y sequences you don't want to use an orangutan.
Well, yeah, some of the stuff you need that.
Yeah.
Because I imagine that any budget for a remake would be pretty small.
I mean, and keeping in mind, that's your major effect. So it's probably not going to cost more than like an episode of Legends of Tomorrow as far as mocap goes. Maybe a little bit more, because that's going to be focused on that one thing.
And also, we don't think about budget.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a fantasy remake.
These are dream ideas. Yeah. Yeah.
If you hear my cast, you're going, yeah, no, I didn't worry about budget.
I didn't either.
Cast is going to get paid more than the entire budget of the original. So,
My top two is going to be a minimum of $40
million. I was actually thinking, like, with the exception of
mine
one.
Mine actually goes lower. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'll get mine out of the way right away.
Okay, well, let's start with Jeff here. Now, keep in mind, we came up with our casting prior to this discussion, so it's not going to, our cast isn't going to be indicative of the film we've now come up with, because we come up with this stuff on the fly. So, like, I know my cast is not a punk setting, but I came up with it afterwards.
Well, I do know that basically there's a guy who directed a movie a couple of years ago called The Sex Trip, which I was reading about, and it's about a guy who turns into a woman, and then it's a movie about a guy in a woman's body exploring sexuality.
Did you find this on Pornhub?
Here's the thing. the guy who, James Fargo, after years of searching for a director to make a remake, saw that movie. Oh, by the way, the movie stars the younger brothers of Tom Hanks, Sylvester Stallone, and someone else.
Oh, okay. So the...
Yeah. But anyway, the guy who directed this movie is apparently, you know, the chosen one, the perfect talent to direct the remake, according to James Fargo, who's going to be producing. So just knowing that this guy cast the younger brothers of a bunch of famous people in his movie, I was thinking that for the main character, you pretty much, like, it would have to be Scott Eastwood, right?
Would it?
Like Clint.
I thought about it on purpose.
I didn't even consider.
To be honest, because he's a lot shorter than Clint. That's where and leaner.
Hey, well, you know what? Tom Cruise is shorter than 90% of the population.
I think Scott actually plays fairly well into the punk situation if you dress him up.
Yeah.
Because you don't need somebody really big at that point, but.
He has like a good ruggedness to him that I think, you know, you could believe that he could fight people.
Sure. I can certainly buy it in the right situation.
I think he has more range than his father, just saying.
Yeah.
Well, there's one really clumsy bit where Clint's talking to Orville, and I'm like, ooh, Clint, was that a one take? Because we needed two. Because Clint stumbled, and it was almost like he forgot his line for a second.
Yeah. Well, I think it was one of those ones where it's like it's close enough, and they might be, again, this whole 70s naturalistic people being type of deal.
Yeah. It just, the way the line was delivered, I'm like, ooh, that didn't sound very good.
Yeah.
Okay, continue with your cast there, Jeff.
Well, really, other than that, basically just based off of the recognition, virtually everyone else, I would probably just try to cast unknowns, which, I mean, boring cast choice, but I think that kind of, other than, a few characters, like, I would just pepper it with lesser-known character actors and unknown people, kind of try to keep that.
Yeah. Jeffrey Lewis was one of those type of guys, because he's that face you saw in everything.
Yeah.
That guy you saw in that thing that one time. He was, you look at his resume when he was with us, and it's massive. Like, this guy never turned down a gig. Yeah. If he wasn't doing a film, he was doing, like, a guest spot on a TV show, and just a year's worth of credits is going to take you an hour to look at.
Yeah, and he was so awesome. Like, I loved him. In this movie, like, I kind of found myself watching him more than Clint, if I'm honest.
Well, yeah, because he was the comedy.
Yeah, right? I enjoy him more.
Because Clint's the straight man pretty much all the way through the movie. He has his moments, but for the most part, he's the straight man. And Orville and Clyde are the ones who play off.
Orville's just a likable goofball.
Yeah, Orville, he's a scene stealer, Jeffrey Lewis, and I'm surprised he didn't get a big career push out of this movie.
Absolutely, right?
And maybe he did, I don't know. I mean, he was always busy.
He was never really going to be a leading man, but certainly he's always been working as a sidekick.
Yeah, great supporting actor.
You know what I find is weird, though, when I was watching this? I'm like, going, you know what? I find Jeffrey Lewis a nicer looking man than Clint Eastwood.
Well, because he's kinder looking. Like, Clint looks mean all the time.
And I don't trust a guy who doesn't really fully open his eyes most of the time.
I think that Clint Eastwood really plays into a specific, like, want of, you know, just a strong, stern, you know, masculine man who is just very boring, two-dimensional.
Not interesting.
Well, that was a very big thing in the 60s and 70s for sure.
Yeah, like Clint Eastwood is that type of actor.
Yeah. So you just had your lead and a bunch of support. Do you have a director for yours, Jeff?
If it was the guy who's supposedly directing it, I don't know, who knows. If it was something that I was going to choose, I would probably want to try to keep the budget as low as possible. And I think that some people who would be good at making a movie kind of like this today would maybe be like Mark Duplass. You know, like he's made a ton of low budget movies, and like a lot of them are very, very good. He's made a couple rote movies. He's kind of dipped his toes in a lot of different genres, but he has a lot of like friends who are, you know, really, really good. And he was really important at the beginning of the mumblecore kind of movement, actually. Mm. That kind of people hanging out, kind of laid back style. Right. I think it kind of fits this type
that,
movie a
that
little.
That could work fairly well, yeah.
Well, it's like safety not guaranteed type of deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he was in that. And exactly. You know, kind of a little bit more, you know, your indie movie kind of thing. Or whoever directed, you know, Little Miss Sunshine, can't remember the director's name.
Okay, both good options. Sam, let's move on to you.
Okay, I'm going to start with my director because, I mean, I didn't even have to sort of think about it. It just sort of popped into my head while I was making dinner last night. I'm going with Jon Favreau. I think he does that great blend of action comedy.
You know what? That's a great choice. I fully support your choice.
Now, again, as Jay said, because I cast prior to our reworking, my cast is a little bit older. I think a younger member or a younger Hugh Jackman would still make a great Philo.
Mm-hmm. But yes, he looks like there's a Eastwood-esque look to him.
There is, and yeah, he can be a big imposing man. So I thought that would be sort of fun to have him play that serious kind of role against my Seth Green as Orville.
Ah.
I really wanted to play up sort of the funny, smart-ass guy. For my Lynn Halsey Taylor, I actually went with an actress who can sing and has those same kind of sharp features that Sandra Locke had.
Yeah.
I went with Anna Kendrick.
Oh, very nice.
For my Echo, I wanted to go with somebody who's a little bit weird and a little bit of a badass. I went with Aubrey Plaza.
Okay.
Sweet.
I did cast Tank because I wanted to sort of play that in there into the story somehow. Whether or not they actually fight or not is another thing to be determined. But I went with Russell Crowe because he looks like a big, bloated fighter.
he's got some age on him.
He does.
You know, and Russell Crowe is like the type of actor these days to just do interesting projects.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And anything he might have fun with.
And you can play into his anger issues.
Exactly. Yeah. And him and Hugh are friends, so that would also be kind of fun to have them sort of playing off each other like that.
Mm-hmm. For my Chola. Have a soundtrack by Great Big Sea.
Yes.
So for my Chola, and he's the only biker I cast because he's sort of the key one, is I cast Jack Black again because he'd just be perfect and have so much fun with that.
Well, mm-hmm. Anchorman, he kicks a dog off a bridge. He's already abused animals on film.
There we go. Oh my God. I did cast both cops. So for Putnam, which is the, for lack of a better way of putting it, the Caucasian cop, I cast Sam Rockwell.
Nice. Oh, okay.
And for my Herb, which is his partner, I cast Ja Rule.
Nice.
And I did cast Ma, and I cast Lily Tomlin as Ma.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, yes.
That's very good.
And that's my entire cast. So I went a little bit deeper than I normally do, but they all deserved to be cast.
Right.
Yeah. I want to see Lily Tomlin with a huge gun.
I think it'd be a lot of fun. And that's exactly the image that was in my head when I was casting her, actually.
I love the Lily Tomlin one. All right, Trish, let's go.
Okay, so I went in sort of a different direction, but it was, they're not all big names, but you would probably know them. For Philo, I kind of went with Kumail Nanjiani, because I noticed how jacked he got for the Eternals. That would be interesting.
You got to get him now before he gets the Oreos.
He would absolutely love to hang out with an orangutan, too.
Oh, I'm sure, think it would be so fun. And then
I can see if you lean a little more into the comedian side a bit, the comedy side a bit. Yeah, he'd be fine. It'd be a very interesting dynamic.
And if we weren't on the same sort of wave as Jay, as I wanted to stay in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
And that's why my cast is kind of whitewashed, I guess is the best way of putting it.
Oh, yeah. And that's
lacking in color.
I was casting for remaking now. I didn't think exactly. And that makes a difference. So that's how this happened.
That was actually the one thing I wasn't sure about, if I would try to keep it in the era or remake it now.
Yeah.
I know that either way, I would kind of want to, like, not remake it per se, but just have it as a chapter. But even so, I don't know if you would want to just have it now, because you'd have more opportunity for the type of storytelling that was interesting in those movies if you have it now.
Once I had a setting in my mind as far as what I wanted to do with it during the punk movement. That's kind of why I settled in as a still a period piece. But it would work just fine. It would work a little differently now.
It would have to be slightly different.
Yeah.
Because I had a different idea. I kind of liked where you went, where you brought in the bikers as the people who had it. But I had this weird thing when I was casting it now. I'm like, the bikers were just like militant PETA who didn't want an orangutan to be with anybody except in the wild. And so they were either going to kill Clyde to quote unquote set him free, which is sometimes what those people do.
It's true. And for everyone listening at home, I believe PETA shelters do have the highest kill rate.
They do have the highest kill rate. So. It's 100% true. They have the highest kill rate. They would rather have dead animals than animals that are pets.
So, you know, not out of the realm of possibility.
So that's sort of what I had in there. That's why I put it there. But I would also like to see Kumail Nanjiani in 70s wear, now that I think of this.
Yeah. I mean, just Kumail Nanjiani in more stuff.
Yeah. Or like just like the snapped, like those old Western shirts. I think it would be a total gig. It would be awesome. For Lynn Halsey Taylor, I went with Emmy Rossum because she's about the right age. It's not creepy. Mm-hmm. And she can really sing.
That was something where I was targeting. It's like I didn't want to have the age gap being too creepy. So unfortunately, I think Sam's is a little bit. But
she's 30. Yeah, there's a 20-year difference there. But she's not super young either.
She
right?
just looks really young. That's the thing. Anna Kendrick just looks so young.
I did that, to bear that in mind. But I'm like, Hugh looks lower, a little bit younger than he actually is. And she looks
much
older than she looks. So I was okay with it.
Oh yeah. Like if part of the stuff they do during the promotion of this movie is say, this is how old they are, it would probably work.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Okay. And then for Orville, I went with Utkarsh Ambedkar. And he played Rishi, Mindy Lahiri's brother on the Mindy Project. And he was also in the Pitch Perfect music movies. So this is kind of a crossover between me and Sam.
There we go.
Because I thought I was still going with the fact that they were brothers.
Nice.
And then for Echo, Joey King, she's quite a young actress. I've seen her in like a few things. She was in that that Wishing Box movie that I saw. Like,
okay, I know who you're talking about. Yeah, she was really good in that, actually.
And then for my bikers, I had them sort of like Aryan looking because I'm like, well, I'm just going to lean into the Nazism. Biker one, Anders Holm. He could be Chola, the leader. And then Biker 2, I didn't even name them because I'm like, they're interchangeable. Ricky Lindholm, they're both very tall and Aryan looking people.
Okay.
So, and then for Ma, I went with Beth Grant. She's that woman in that thing you've seen that time, you know?
Oh, that thing.
I can't really talk about. No, I don't.
Yeah.
You would, if I show you a picture, be like, oh, that lady. Yeah, she's one of those. And then for my director, I didn't know which one to go with because I'm like, if I want big action sequences, Patty Jenkins would be great. But if I want like sort of a low budget indie feel, I have Olivia Wilde. So maybe they could like team up and co-direct and that would be a good movie.
What about Catherine Bigelow?
Ooh, I mean, she would be good too, but she's more explosion-y. Jenkins is more of action empowerment.
Because she's explosion-y, but if you think back to like earlier in her career, like with
Point Break is great.
You know, like something kind of like that would be a good fit.
Yeah, absolutely. Like her Point Break days.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Point Break's awesome. So that's me.
Yeah, no. Interesting cast, even though I'm going to have to look some of them up.
And I didn't do the cops because I didn't, again, like I said, I completely forgot about them until they came back on screen again.
Yeah. Okay, well, I did do them, so we'll get there. But I'm going to start with my director because I often forget otherwise. For my director, I went with Jake Kasdan, who just directed the last two Jumanji movies.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Is he Lawrence Kasdan's kid?
Yes.
Okay.
But yeah, he's got an interesting resume when you start looking at it, but I think he's very good at balancing action and comedy. So yeah, see
and
what he does
actually,
with it.
I don't know if he was credited or not, but I know that him and Lawrence Kasdan like co-wrote the script for Solo together, basically, because Jake Kasdan said so on a podcast I listened to.
Nice.
And yeah, Solo, not as bad as you think.
Yeah, no, it actually is like a really fun, like clippy, has good dialogue.
Yeah,
has
I really like, that's what actually one of my favorites from the Disney era, but that was just reviving an old line that you probably aren't aware of.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a t-shirt.
All right, for my Philo, I went with Josh Brolin.
Nice.
Come on.
Nice.
Yeah. So that kind of set my age bracket too. It's like, okay, now we're pushing in the early 50s, unfortunately.
So if you were to do this, would you, you know, thought consideration, have him be an older Milo? You know, well, I mean, take place in like
Clint was in like his mid 40s at this point, so
he was 48
yeah,
when
he looks
older.
Yeah,
yeah, true, true.
So, I mean, age wise, they're not that too far apart. It was about 4 years older than Clint was when he did the role. So,
I'm crazy.
Yeah. So, I, obviously, with this casting, I had a much different movie in mind that was a lot closer to the original. Yeah. But it's still fun casting that way. For Lynn Halsey Taylor, again, everybody went with actresses who can sing for the most part. I went with Nicole Kidman, also trying to stay in the age bracket.
Oh, that totally works.
Yeah. For Orville, Sam's going to like this one, Walton Goggins.
Nice.
Ah, yes.
Very nice. Yeah, I love Walton, and I try not to use him too much, so thank you for using him.
Yes, I don't use him very much, but I wanted to have that interesting look, that still have that lanky look, and I'm like, oh, Walt's perfect for that role.
That Gene Spieler look, too.
And even and he's kind of that guy you saw in that thing that one time now. Like, Walton Goggins is becoming that.
he's really like a poor man, skinny Clint Howard.
Well, I don't know about that.
No.
He's a far better actor.
Walton Goggins
than
is an attractive man.
I really like Walter Goggins, but I just think both of them have the crazy eyes.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Now, I wanted to get rid of the creepy age gap between him and Echo, so I aged her up a little bit, and I went with, there's still a gap, but it's not as bad. Yeah. I went with Maggie Grace from Lost and Fear of the Walking Dead.
Nice.
Okay. Oh, nice.
For Tank Murdoch, even though he's barely in the movie, it's still an important character. And I thought to add some legitimacy to the character, let's go to the MMA world and somebody who does have an acting background. I went with Randy Couture.
Ooh.
Okay.
Yeah. For Ma, how could it be anybody but Betty White?
Sweet.
I'm like, one more from you. One more from Betty. But I really liked Lily Tomlin.
I was looking at her too. I'm like, it felt too easy.
Yeah, it is too easy.
Oh, see,
it's tough with Betty White because she's like Stan Lee at this point, where she's known for being Betty White.
And that's part of the problem is you only see Betty at that point.
Well, what I also didn't want to think of is like, I didn't want this to be Betty White's last role.
I just like the idea of hearing Betty White swearing. So,
yeah, she swears good.
For my gang leader, because he was this sad mid-50s gang leader.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, let's stick with that for now. I'm sure we'll change it. But I went with Don Johnson.
Nice.
He's got the kind of look.
Yeah.
You have to have him and Mickey Rourke.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
They have to be there. And a joke to the
I wonder if I... Just to play into the comedy angle a little bit more, I wonder if you would just want to make the biker gang like the Straight Satans, where they're like just a bunch of like, you know, middle-aged white men who just for fun on the weekends were, you know, a hardcore biker gang.
That's almost what they are.
They just do that way more. Yeah. And I did cast the two cops, which was Putnam and Herb. And I went with both of them were partners in a very short-lived sci-fi cop show called Almost Human. I went with Carl Urban and Michael Ealy from that show.
Nice.
So we know they can do comedy in action. So.
Yes.
You know, worth checking out if you haven't heard of it.
Oh, for its short one season, it was a spectacular series that was
if you were wondering why it didn't last long, it's like one of those, you know, it got messed around with the network. They changed to the night it aired. They changed the time it aired. They aired the episodes out of order.
It got Firefly'd.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So worth checking out.
Yeah, it was definitely worth checking out. And it was sad. I was very sad when that got canceled because it was so, so good. Yeah.
Well, there comes a certain point where you're wondering not so much if it got canceled because of it wasn't getting the ratings or because they legitimately messed with it so much on purpose. Like there's so many times I see this happening. I'm like, going, I swear to God, these executives, this can't be new to them.
Yeah, I don't know. They who pissed off who to get to sabotage a show like that?
Some numbers question went, oh, wait, this is costing way too much money.
It probably was a fairly expensive show because of its sci-fi settings, despite being a procedural.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was my cast. I didn't do a lot of the minors as far as that, but I got all the majors in there and a few extras. So
there's a lot of minor characters.
It's a fairly robust cast, and there's quite a bit just in the Black Widows themselves. So.
Oh, yeah.
But I think we came up with a pretty, pretty good movie. And as our first entry into the Ape-rill, Ape-pocalypse.
Yeah. I don't know if, considering everything that's happening, we should use Apocalypse, but
you know what? Too late. All the marketing material is done.
And you know what? It really worked out for the best, because when me and Jay were talking about this last month, it didn't even clue into my brain that it was April. So it was meant to be.
Yeah.
No, oh my gosh.
He just pitched the idea, and then I'm like, well, it has to happen in April.
Yeah, you took that part out, Jay.
What was that? Oh yeah.
Yeah, I think you told me about it. I'm like, I love it, and then you're like, let's do it in April, and we're like, yes, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, and see, and then when I heard about it, it was April in my head when you said it.
Yeah. Well, that's why I did it that way. It's like, well, apes in the name. It's in the month. We got to do it, man.
Everything's going monkey bananas as it is, so why not?
Yeah, it is. We're going to be monkeying around all month long, and thank you, Sam, for the fun jungle intro and outro that you have remixed for us for this month.
That stuff was so much fun to do. The hard part was finding the gorillas, believe it or not.
Yeah. Thank you, Jeff, for the teaser material and the idea.
Woo!
And yay. Trish has done our social media corner box, which you'll recognize, and there's one from each movie that we're doing this month, if you can pick it out.
They're all in there.
They are all in there.
And I imagine, cut this out if you don't want people to send in their ideas, but you know, if there's a monkey movie out there that you really love that really is worth remaking, but let's face it, monkey movies are obscure. We'd love to hear about them.
Hey, yeah, we'd absolutely love to hear about it. We actually do have another fan request that we're going to try to sneak in May. Another older movie that I have never heard of, but it's right up my alley. I'm like, well, this sounds fascinating. Sweet. So we're going to try to fit that in May. And if you would like to make your own fan challenges, you can do that in a bunch of different places. Make sure you follow us on our social media, at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and invasiontheremake@gmail.com if you want to email us your suggestions, your corrections, your comments. If you have a fan challenge, we do ask, tell us about the movie, of course, why you think we should do it, why you think it would make a good remake, and hopefully try to find a source for it as well, for us to find it. If it's something we can't source, then if it's not on some streaming service or YouTube or something like that, then, you know, but it's less likely that we'll do your movie idea.
Yeah, and in the next little while, it's very important it be streaming available, because we can't all gather in the same place and watch it.
Exactly. Or at the very, very least, in print.
Yeah, if I can order it on Amazon, then that's an option. Yeah. Or if it's on
VOD. Or if it's on YouTube or something.
VOD, yeah. YouTube, I have
Tubi,
Amazon Prime, Disney Plus, and Netflix, of course. So those are my streaming options.
Yeah, that's a new Tubi. It's on Tubi.
And I've got access to VOD through my PlayStation. So I have a lot of sourcing as well that we can do. Yeah. We dive into a lot of different places to get this stuff.
We also have all fairly big film libraries.
I do indeed.
So
yes.
But if we haven't heard of it, it's probably not in any of our libraries.
Yeah. This was one of those, I've never heard of this, but given how fun doing the alligator people was.
Yeah.
I'm happy to do another one of those.
Nice.
That's kind of how we like our fan challenges. Keep it weird. If you've been a fan of our show for a while, you know what? Well, you kind of got a feeling for our tastes in movies. So.
Yes.
Well, maybe not our taste, but the things that we enjoy doing, even if we don't like the movie.
Yeah.
Because I still can't say I enjoyed Alligator People.
Yeah,
I like that.
The challenge of doing it is okay, as long as it's not too challenging, like Hard Rock Zombies.
Yeah, well, there
that
was,
wasn't a challenge. There was a challenge, but
I was once challenged to do a movie, but it was kind of anthology style. Like, yeah, that's too much. It's too much to follow. Like, do all these separate stories. So that's something we're probably never going to do, unfortunately, because it's each segment probably deserves a nice long conversation in and of themselves. So anthologies won't happen.
Yeah, you know, if you're going to remake an anthology, like, quite honestly, it's going to be another anthology with different stuff.
Oh yeah, like I would just, if I did an anthology, I just suggest different stories to do.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It wouldn't be the same movie at all.
You know, we would all love more installments of our favorite anthologies. Mm-hmm. We agree.
And we want more listeners as well. So make sure you tell your friends and families about the show, especially now that you're kind of stuck at home and maybe you've watched through your entire Netflix queue. Start going back to your podcasts and tell your friends and family about the show. And we're in a ton of different places, and you can find that on our social media through our new Linktree and our Wix site, which is what, Sam?
Which is invasionoftheremake.wixsite.com/podcast.
Thank you very much. Help people get their
earballs
on the show. So if you guys are enjoying the April Apocalypse, make sure you spread it around. And just spread the show around. Don't spread anything else around. Keep that social distancing up, and let's squash this thing. And we'll try to keep you entertained through these difficult times. And we hope everybody's well and healthy. Wash your hands and observe social distancing. And please take it seriously so we can all get back to work. And get back to the lives that we know and love rather than being stuck in our abodes.
Yes.
I've been kind of liking it.
With our own thoughts. This isn't safe, people.
Now you know how the monkeys feel.
Yes. Stuck in cages.
Exactly.
All right. Well, we're going to be doing a comparison next week, and the monkey around continues until next week. I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
I continue to be Trish.
And I am Jeff Omega? No. I'm Jeff Omapa.
Omapa. Oh, my. And we are out of here.
Section of Interstate 5 LSKS Road, quarry 602. 103 here. Gotcha. Over.
Ah, that 602 is the same as our 406.
No way. It's got to be the same as our 309 or our best, our 213.
You're crazy.
Only Mexican 602 can come anywhere near California 309.
Okay, when's the last time you've been out on a 309?
Maybe 3 or 4 months. But it don't mean that I don't know that our 309 ain't more than that damn 602.
Okay, what time you got?
607.
Unit 103, abort that 602, 103. Proceed to Valles Quez Road on Interstate 5 for 607.
Oh, kiss my...